Eagle McMahon walked onto the course, and the tree started shaking in fear. They knew it wasn't just another birdie. It was an eagle on the hunt.
Oh my goodness. Well,
I thought it was
that's pretty amazing. After last episode, we realized that 2 minutes was an absolutely terrible placeholder name, so we brainstormed and we found our name. And to kick off the official start of the Crushed Pepper podcast, ChatGPT has wrote us a little bit of a poem.
Oh, God.
And here it is. Crushed Pepper Vibes. Simon, Joey, Eagle in play. Spicy chats and laughs convey. Discs and stories, the trio's flow. Crushed Peppers, the show to know.
Crushed Peppers?
Crushed Peppers.
Crushed Pepper.
I don't know. Tell that to ChatGPT.
That's close enough. I appreciate the effort. And welcome back to the show, Crushed Pepper. We have the Crush Boys, of course. And then Joey Tamale, who is representing the Hot Tamale Pepper. It just makes sense. Shout out Andrew Johnson, team manager, who came up with the name. And I think we found our identity.
My favorite part is the photo that we're using right now on the Spotify page.
The icon is going to be iconic.
Thank you to AI, to who made that.
AI overlord.
Well, I would like to start off this episode by going back a little bit to something that you and I talked a lot about in the first episode, Simon, which was our off seasons, and we heard a bit from Mr. McMahon about his off season routines at home, but I wanted to prompt him into a little bit of a story about a big trip that he took this year. For those of you who don't know Eagle as well as we do, I would say that anime and a lot of kind of Japanese type things have really become a very important part of kind of his identity and a lot of the things that he loves to consume. And Eagle and his lovely girlfriend Ratana took an amazing trip to Japan for the first time ever this November. And I've heard a little bit about it, but I think the listeners deserve a little recap, because I feel like it was a pretty big lifetime trip for you, Eagle.
Most definitely. Japan has always been the number one bucket list location that I have wanted to visit. And I don't think many people know this. I know Joey definitely knows this. I don't want to call myself a nerd, but I'm very into personal finance and using credit card points and accumulating credit card points. So I was actually in Finland before European Open, and I was searching the reward redemptions I could get for points. And there's amazing deal to go to Tokyo from my home airport of Denver. And I accumulated a lot of points by, you know, using the right credit cards. And I was like, okay, you know, I haven't taken like a proper vacation. Like, you could argue that I'm always on vacation when playing disc golf, but I wanted to go somewhere without my disc golf bag. So I was looking at November, and I saw some really good flights. I redeemed some points for two flights to Tokyo. Went for 15 days, and oh my gosh, it was a life-transforming experience, I would say. I feel like it definitely set some goals and aspirations for my future on where I can see myself spending a lot of time when I'm done playing disc golf, potentially even living over in Japan. They're very lofty goals, but that's how much I liked it. So I went to Japan for 15 days with my girlfriend Ratana, and we actually met some of our good friends over there, I and Corey and her daughter, which was really helpful because I, who's actually my acupuncturist, but also, you know, Ratana met her and she was teaching her disc golf lessons, but we've cultivated a really awesome friendship with them. She's Japanese, so we were able to use her as a guide. She was able to speak the language and kind of help us out. And we went from Tokyo to Kyoto. We saw a lot of the shrines and temples. We also went into the mountains of Nikko, which is like 3 hours outside of Tokyo, to this ryokan, which is like this traditional Japanese inn. We went to hot springs, also known as onsen, and just had a really amazing experience eating just amazing food, going shopping in Tokyo, getting some really cool stuff. We even played some disc golf, which was actually really terrible.
It's not a weight limit anymore, right?
There's no weight limit, but we went to this one course that we had to check in, and we had our disc golf disc with us, and we had just like mid-ranges and putters because we knew the courses were going to be short. We even had a glitch, and they wouldn't let us use those discs because they were kind of – they wanted us to use dog discs for the course because they saw – I think they still adhere to the notion that – discs are weapons, so we couldn't use any of our discs. But the holes were like 150 feet. They were so short. They were uncomfortably short. But you know, it was fun to play. And there was also like these park golf courses that looked really, really cool. It's kind of like golf with like a hockey stick type deal, and that seems like to be pretty big in Japan. So the two courses that we did go to, they both had the park golf right next to it, which, honestly, it would probably have been more fun playing that. But
what do you hit? What do you hit in park golf? Are you hitting a ball?
Yeah, gosh, I think it looked kind of like a lighter, like softball type deal. Like, you know, somewhere it's like the size of a tennis ball, like a lacrosse ball, essentially. And they were using that in like a lot of the holes were maybe like 250 feet. It looked really fun. And I honestly wish I made an effort to play. But yeah, the two courses we played in Japan weren't all that great. We played the only course in Tokyo, and again, the holes were uncomfortably short. But I mean, I played disc golf in Asia, which is something to cross off the bucket list. But obviously, the trip wasn't about disc golf. It was about seeing a different culture. My first time to Asia, and it was absolutely incredible. And I'm already planning my return. This year, once the season's over, I want to head back over there and maybe even, you know, go to the Philippines or Thailand when I'm over there. Definitely looking to spend more time in Asia just because it's really awesome seeing a different culture. Like going to Europe definitely changes your perspective on a lot of things. But when you go to the more Eastern countries and I imagine even like these African countries, it completely broadens your horizon and realize America is not the only place. Like people function so differently in so many different places in the world, and consuming some of that culture and, you know, getting a broader look on what people are really is one of the best things you can do in life, I feel.
Well, it sounds like you had an unbelievable experience. Thank you for sharing.
If people are interested, on my second channel, I did a little vlog, so you can go check it out.
Simon, did you feel any sort of any of that? I know it's obviously not as extreme coming from the U.S. to Europe or Europe to the U.S., but the first time you came to the U.S. or the first few times, did you feel any of like a wow, this is way different, or were you sort of used to or expecting it all?
No, everything is insanely different in the U.S. coming from Germany. I think any U.S. person who's ever visited Germany understands, like, whoa, when you go to Germany, it's a completely different world, different culture, different food, obviously different language. And I mean, everything is different. And for me, that was the U.S. for a long time. And I think it took me almost exactly 10 years to feel like the U.S. is my home and to feel like, oh, I'm used to this now. And when I like go to Europe for either tournament or visiting friends and family, I come back to the U.S. and I land in Boston. I feel like, oh, finally back home. But it took many, many years for that feeling to be there. But I also want to quickly say that I went to Japan in, I think it was 2015. I got to play the Japan Open, and I absolutely loved it as well. I think I only spent 3 or 4 days in Tokyo itself, so I definitely don't know too much about it, but I just remember leaving Japan with the feeling that one day I want to move there, just because I just loved the people so much. Everyone seemed just so friendly and respectful. It's just like a different level of just being like okay, because obviously Tokyo is a massive freaking place and a lot of people that live there don't have much. I mean, like compared to like US standards, but everyone seems like more content with what they have, and just they live on such tight room there that if everyone was behaving poorly, it would just not work. So I don't know, just the way that people are acting there, the way they present themselves, and the mentality that you can just kind of feel when you're there. It's just different. And I really, really liked that and felt really safe. And I don't know, just fun.
The whole culture is based upon respecting one another. And I think that goes back for a long period of time in their culture. And one of the big reasons is because they're on a fault line and they never know when just a massive earthquake could take place and completely ruin everything. But they know that they need to come together and respect one another in order to make their society work like it does. And I usually hate big cities. Like when I go to New York, I feel claustrophobic. I want to get out of there. But for some reason, when I was in Tokyo, it felt like I was in a small town while being in virtually the biggest city in the world, just because everyone respects your space. You feel really safe. You can walk out in the middle of the night and just see people walking around. And like, there's just you'd have to go to understand the vibe when you're there. It feels like it's not real, but it is. It's there for you to
explore. So many, what really threw me off at first, so many people wear the same thing. Like you'll see like black pants with a white shirt. I think that's like the main, I don't know if it's like a dress code or if that's just kind of what people go with as their like business or work clothes. But it's so crazy that you just walk around and everyone is wearing like the same outfit. That like totally threw me off at first, but then I kind of liked it.
Right, there is a little bit of a dress code when you're there. So like during the summer months, you'll see people wearing short sleeve shirts, and they don't really wear shorts in Japan. I could be wrong, but as soon as fall starts, it's like a unanimous decision for all the locals to start wearing long sleeves, even if it's warm out. So like it was probably like 75, and you know, maybe there was like 180 degree day when we were there, but no one was wearing short sleeve shirt unless you were a foreigner. So like I didn't feel like I was allowed to wear a short sleeve shirt, even if it was hot out, just because everybody around you had a style that they were adhering to. So that was really interesting. Plus like all the schools require you to wear a school uniform. So like you'll see so many kids or, you know, younger people walking around in school uniforms. And I don't think there's like that freedom to wear whatever you want to certain schools. It's probably like that. I mean, there's private schools that do that, of course, but it's everywhere in Japan, which is very interesting.
Cool. Well, when I heard Eagles in Japan, I thought to myself, and I think I even talked to Andrew, who's our team manager, about it, like, he might not come back. We might have lost Eagle.
It was only a one-year deal.
You know, maybe someday, but you got to be prepared to if you want to move over there. Like, I think learning the language is a non-negotiable if you do choose to go over there, because some people, they speak a little bit of broken English, but when it comes down to it, if you want to make any sort of friends or have any sort of connection, you really need to learn how to speak Japanese. So that's something that I'm working on right now.
I think definitely, though, we've really touched on the fact that venturing outside of the U.S. and really outside of North America to some of these places, it can show you truly how different the world can feel, even though it's all the same rock floating around in space. There are some places that don't even feel like you're on the same planet. And I've definitely had that feeling traveling to Africa and South America multiple times. It's one of my favorite types of shock is culture shock. It's very fun.
Absolutely.
Let's go on.
One thing I want to add real quick is a pseudo segment. Maybe it can turn into a more fleshed out segment is Eagles financial tips. A lot of people are probably listening thinking, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to travel abroad because it's a lot of money. But if you have any sort of discipline and have a good credit score, or you can build your credit score, taking advantage of miles and points can open up worlds to you by not necessarily doing anything other than just spending money. So getting familiar with the big credit card companies and learning how to leverage those points, like if you're a disc golfer, like this is a tip to some touring pros out there even. A lot of people don't go to Europe because it's an expensive flight. But if you plan far in advance, you have to sign up for your tour card, a bunch of tournaments. That costs anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, which usually is the amount of spend you need to make in order to unlock a certain reward. So, for example, Chase, if they have the their Inc. business card lineup, each one of those cards, if you were to spend, say, $5,000 in the first 3 months, you unlock a 80 to 100,000 point reward, which if you're smart about it, you can redeem a full round trip flight to Europe for free. So knowing where to look and how to leverage points could help you get to some of these exotic locations to play disc golf that that you see all the top players at during the summer and that you dream of. So
let me keep
that in mind.
Let me double down on this and say that I joined the Eagle McMahon School of Finance in February of 2022 when I switched to Chase Bank under his recommendation. And then last year when I started my business, actually did a very similar thing and got the Inc. business. And all of the flights that I buy this year for myself and for my girlfriend going here and from Europe and back to the U.S., I will pay $0 for because I have accumulated 150,000 points, which is equivalent to almost $4,000 worth of like plane tickets for the entire year. So I am literally going to fly for free because of money that I was going to spend already last year on my business. And so it does actually have huge benefit for me as someone who is like, and in kind of the beginning phases of starting my business and sort of like starting my career, you know, cash flow and having a bunch of extra money is not really a luxury that I have. So being able to pay for things like flights, which is one of my biggest expenses with points is huge. So I am proof in the pudding that what Eagle's talking about works because I basically followed his advice the last few years and I'm in a very good spot. So if you ever see me start to plummet, then just stop listening to Eagle's financial tip segment.
Well, the key point here is responsible uses of credit cards. Like treat it like a debit card. Don't carry a balance. If you use it a bunch each month, try to pay it off in full because, you know, credit card debt is nothing to mess around with. Dave Ramsey, if anybody's heard of him, he advocates no credit card use, which I disagree with, as long as you're able to be disciplined and use it correctly. This is not financial advice, by the way. I'm just some random disc golfer.
Also not sponsored by Chase Bank, this segment, by the way.
No, not sponsored.
Not yet. No.
All right, Simon.
Yeah. What is up?
You want to
Let's do the segment.
Take away?
I'll do the non-pseudo segment.
It's segment time.
And this is good because last week I was sad that I couldn't play along, but this week we have a new game where I can play along as well because it's not a blind ranking. Now I just have to find it on my phone real quick.
I will say your list, it did its job last week because I was definitely frustrated when I saw the final one, and I wished I had saved my top spot till the end. But that's the whole point of it.
All right, so we are playing a quick Would You Rather Disc Golf Edition. So we can basically just quickly, I'll give you 10 would you rathers, and you can quickly choose what you would rather do and explain why. Some of these will be pretty quick and easy, and some of these might be a little deep dive into something a bit more interesting. All right, are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, a resounding yes. All right, first one. Would you rather miss a 15-footer or get a spit out from 15 feet?
Spit out. It's the basket's fault, not mine.
Spit out.
Really? I totally disagree.
Very interesting. Explain.
Isn't it way nicer to feel like you messed up and not you got kind of really unlucky or just punished for something you didn't do? Like, I feel way better about myself that if I just missed a 15-footer, which sadly happens to everyone sometimes, and I can, like, just kind of get over it faster. But sometimes I've missed, like, a 15-footer that hits dead center right where you want and it falls back right at you. That can sting and that can hurt and that can really throw me off my mental game and fun during a round. So I much rather miss a short putt than get a spit out.
I see your perspective, but have you measured 15 feet, how close it is?
No, I know it's close.
If you like miss... No,
yeah, if I missed a putt that short, oh man.
It's really close.
I know, but like, it would almost be so bad that it's funny. Like, it wouldn't really rattle
you. Yeah, you end up on like small bore outlaw compilations.
No, I mean, you've missed 15 footers.
Oh, of course. But I'd rather just throw it in there and have it spit out because I know it's like, it's not me. I can adjust my mindset a lot better. Like, okay, you know, that's a fluke. And it kind of depends. Like, what basket are we putting on? Are we putting on an MVP basket, which is like a total fluke if it spits out? Or, you know, I'm not going to name other baskets. You know, they breed spit outs. So,
yeah, okay.
There are certainly baskets that I go into tournament rounds and I'm sort of like, I mean, I'm not a soft putter. So I am sort of like banking on one or two maybe coming out. And I sort of agree with Eagle. For me, like, I think because of the proximity to the basket, 15 feet, I think I would be more rattled by whiffing. I suppose I'm envisioning I would airball it. So I guess I like could hit the cage or something. It wouldn't
be
so bad.
Yeah, hit the cage,
but, like,
or just like splash out right
hit
side.
Hit the chains. I'm like picturing me just like totally yanking it to the right from 15 feet. That would absolutely shake me more than a spit out. Because a spit out, at least I did the right thing. It wasn't like a complete brain fart.
All right.
Okay, to expand on this point real quick, would you rather park a shot and hit the pole and roll away, or would you rather hit the first tree in front of you?
Probably park a shot, hit the pole, and roll away.
Park a shot, hit the pole, and roll away.
That's the same as a spit out. Like, you're doing the right thing rather than being bad. And missing a putt from 15 feet is just bad.
Maybe Simon's just better at shaking those things off than we are. Like, maybe he's like a much better at bouncing back from like some stupid embarrassing mistake.
It's not the same scenario because it could still be a different score. Like, if you hit the first tree, you're probably just barely scrambling to get a par.
What if you hit the pole on an uphill hole and it rolls back to where the first
okay,
tree
so the
is.
Scenario is that the disc ends up in the same spot. If that's the okay, yes. Then it is comparable. In that case, I would probably still prefer the basket hit. But I'm not sure it's the same thing yet.
Oh. All right, let's go to the next.
Unfortunately, the next one is a bit along the same lines. Would you rather slip and shank a shot or just shank a shot?
Slip and shank a shot.
Yeah, slip and shank.
All right, okay, I agree. I agree on that one for some reason. But for some reason, spit outs just don't sit right with me, but whatever.
I do have a very rough relationship with spit outs. It's the hardest thing on the disc golf course for me to wrap my head around.
I think that your card mate should be able to determine whether how bad the magnitude of the spit out is and award you the putt as made. I know that'll never happen, but it's like sometimes they're so dead center that it only makes me think, it's like, what else can you do? It's just unfair. So it's like, give me the putt.
My favorite,
but of course, that's not going
to
happen.
My favorite thing is that how much I look at all my card mates after a spit out to try to just like just pry all the empathy out of them that I can. Like, I want you to validate that that was
give
supposed
me sympathy.
To, give me, no, tell me that that should have gone in. Like, don't write down the wrong number on the scorecard.
Tell
like,
me it's all okay.
But then,
yes, can we?
There's also the opposite feeling where you like throw a horrible putt, it somehow goes in, and you just look at the other players and you're like, I do not know how that went in. That did not deserve to go in at all.
Yeah, no one's happy that it went in, and it's like, people, you're like, how can this guy be so lucky?
Yeah, who's someone who just makes it barely over the rim every time? Is that like Calvin Heimberg thing, maybe?
Nate Sexton.
Oh, Sexton too? Oh, yeah. Just like squeezing it in every time, at some point you're just
I
like,
mean,
well,
okay,
Nate,
I'll say
just
that
throw
when-
it higher.
When Macbeth like squeaks those left side like little, I call them the Macbeth toilet bowl putt, where it like just goes in left side and it like curls around the basket to the right side, and you ask Paul and he's like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm like, that's where I'm aiming, like that's part of my aiming spot, like I have a diagonal target on my eyes.
I know exactly what type of putt,
and I'm sure the people who get
so
yes,
many times
I'm sure the people who have gotten beaten by him down the stretch on those little makes, they're just like, God, if that was like an inch left, he's missing.
Mm-hmm,
it is a total toilet bowl feeling too. All right, next one. Would you rather start the tournament with an ace or finish the tournament with an ace?
Start.
I'll take either one.
You have to decide. That's the game.
I think end the tournament because this is sad, but I've noticed my happiness is so much greater if I get a good score on a final hole.
That's true.
Like, it makes it so much easier to go to end your round and go sign discs when you like finish with a birdie or like
or an ace
rather than around a bogey. Like, if you aced your final hole, it's like, yeah, I am going to be freaking chilling for the rest of the day. So
I agree with Eagle on this one, because if you start a tournament with an ace, it can literally only get worse. Like, the highlight of your round is literally your first shot. And I don't think that's a good way to start a tournament. I think walking off with an ace, there's literally no cooler or better thing.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I have experience here. I have walked off. I have walked off aced. It's one of my only open wins in an unsanctioned tournament against my best friend, Eli Swanson. I'm sorry to call him out here on this podcast, but I'm going to, because that's what happened. He was up by one, and he put it to 20 feet, and I knew I had to ace, and it was this uphill shot. Simon's been there, Pathway of the Gods, and I nailed it, dead center. And he had a 20-footer for the
That's an insane ace, just
playoff.
So people know. That's actually an insane ace.
It was ridiculous. It is one of the best feelings of my entire life. And then he had a 20-footer for a playoff, and we won't say the name of the brand of this basket, but it went straight through the center. I was literally on FaceTime with Simon. He saw the putt go straight through the center, and I won by one stroke because of that ace.
Wow.
But that being said, I think that I would rather have it on hole one, because I have been struggling a lot last year with like getting off to good starts and just like kind of being a little nervous on the first hole. And I think like an ace, I don't know, I mean, it would send your emotions everywhere, but I also think it would like give me a big nudge in the right direction to start my round. And I think for me, I would try my hardest to feel it as like momentum of like, all right, see, this is a sign that like this is going to be a good day, and we're going to like take this and we're going to run with it.
I don't like signs. They are jinxes for me. All right, next one.
Signs are scary.
Next one. If you feel between discs, would you rather disc up and throw softer or disc down and throw harder?
For me, it's my style of play is the latter. So disc down and throw harder. That's normally what I end up doing. Whether it's right or wrong is subjective. But
why?
Well, just because I generally feel more comfortable when I throw just a little bit harder. I feel like I have a little bit better control. As I age gracefully through this life, I would prefer to take the first option because that means my body will thank me because I'll be throwing a little bit softer.
It means your shoulder stays in its socket.
Exactly. So, you know, there's nuance on this. I would say as of right now, I go with the latter, but I'm going to strive for the first option.
Joey?
I'm the first option, and my reasoning is because I want to be thinking more about where I'm throwing it instead of how hard I need to throw it.
Yeah, I'm also definitely the first option. I think I used to throw more putters hard, and now I feel way more comfortable throwing mid-ranges soft.
Do you think you could still clear the pond at Waco with your putter?
I do think I could.
Yeah.
Give me a perfectly seasoned proxy and anything's possible.
That was one of the first...
You could easily do with a proxy.
That was one of the first, like, first rounds I ever had filmed both of you on at Waco. That was one of my first...
That was such a cool group, too. It was me, Eagle, Seppo, and Jerm.
Yep.
Like, that's right. How iconic is that group? I loved it.
Was that round one?
I think it was final round.
I think it was final round. And then Paul, because this was the day after the 18 under, right?
I think we were Chase Card. Yeah.
We were Chase Card.
So, yeah, Paul was winning a hole behind you guys or something like that because he had just destroyed everyone the second day.
And then Simon missed the putt.
I've missed so many embarrassing putts after 15
feet?
Shots.
Was that a 15-footer?
That's one of the hardest baskets.
It was probably
20. In my opinion.
Well, it wasn't where it is now. The basket back then was further back and not really that scary.
Right. Now it's like on the edge of the side hill.
Yeah. And it was like 20, 25 feet further back then. And it was like on the flat where now like drives land where they go a bit long, where you have the death putt coming back. All right. Next one.
It's like basically.
Next one.
Would you rather play disc golf for fun or play disc golf for a living?
For a living?
That's a tough one. Joey, for a living.
Because right now I don't. So my dream is to play disc golf for a living because I don't make my money playing disc golf right now.
Fair. Eagle?
Can I play disc golf for a fun living?
No.
All right, then that's for a living because that's what I do. But I do like playing disc golf for fun as well.
I'm too competitive to like not take it somewhat seriously in every round. Like not like my score, but at least like what I expect my body to be able to do on each throw. And that like, so there's always competitiveness with me, even if it's like the most casual of settings.
Very good. I think I would also rather play for a living. It's maybe the coolest job in the world. All right, up next. I'm actually going to skip one because I don't like it anymore. All right, here we go. So I'm going to do 9. This is number 6. Would you rather be really good at disc golf but not enjoy it that much or love it so much but not be that great at it?
The latter.
Fair answer. Why?
Because this goes back to episode number 1. Do you like playing and feeling hollow on the inside that you don't want to be out there?
Yeah.
I want to enjoy it. I want to play disc golf for fun.
Yep. I'm in Eagle's boat.
Yeah, I think it is much more valuable to do something that you love and not be that great at it versus be really great at something but you don't really enjoy it. It's a pretty easy answer, actually, if you think about it for a minute.
I mean, virtually everybody playing disc golf is playing it for fun. Like there's probably a very small percentage of people that fall into your first category. It's pretty rare.
Who's the best player right now who you think doesn't enjoy it?
That's a great question. Maybe
I think it could have. I think in past years it applied to both of you for a little bit.
I think it's applied to virtually every touring pro, because obviously to get into disc golf you have to like it. It's very rare you get an extremely talented player that just doesn't like disc golf. Like, I don't think that really happens. Like the only instance of an athlete in general is Andre Agassi. I remember reading his book. His dad like forced him into practicing tennis, and like his whole career he just said how much he hates tennis, but it's like it's the only thing he knows how to do. And, you know, maybe there might be some kids coming up in disc golf who have like this crazy forceful set of parents who just forces the child to play disc golf, and, you know, maybe he doesn't like it, but I think that's very rare. That's like less than 1% of the disc golf population.
I just don't think disc golf is like a forcing your kid to play type of sport really yet. Or at least, like, that's not what I think about.
They're coming.
What's next?
Yeah, I guess that was not a great one. All right. So the scenario is a 30-footer to save your life. Would you rather have me take it or you?
You.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What's the trial period? Like, you make the putt, and how much time do you get afterwards?
No, you're dead. Gun to your head.
So it doesn't matter either way. So, like, if you miss the putt, I can't get mad at you afterwards.
Correct. No, you're dead.
So it's like, is it you on a good day or me on a good day?
Right now.
Right now?
Ooh, right now.
I'll take me all day.
Right now, I might take me. When you said Simon or Joey, I was thinking like 2022
Prime
playoff versus Robert Burridge at Des Moines Challenge, the playoff holes, like hole 3 and hole 4, Simon. That's the kind of putter I was picturing.
I don't know. When I wrote this, I thought it might be like an ethical dilemma a bit, that you have to take it yourself and there's never the right way. Even if I was like a significantly better putter than you, you should still do it yourself.
Is it windy?
Oh, because it's like you decide your own life, basically. Like, you should be like man enough to do that.
What basket are we putting on?
All right, let's move on. Let's move on.
All right, next question.
I'm clearly not good at coming up with would you rather questions.
No, these are great.
These are good. They're all prompting discussion.
Okay. Next one. Would you rather putt with a driver on every hole or drive with a putter on every hole?
Drive with a putter. Easy. I hate putting with drivers.
I could putt with a driver.
On the pro tour, I feel like putting with a driver is the right answer, though.
I would putt with a driver because I haven't, like, actually, all three of us are pretty, like, forceful spin putters. And I think that the people who can modify their putt to a driver the best are the people who are like kind of really kind of directing the putt, very spinny. And I think you could just get like a understable.
Yeah, putting with a Crave sounds pretty doable.
Yes, exactly.
So Eagle's wrong on this one.
Putting with it. Well, does this mean, are we throwing the same disc on every hole?
No, just.
Is it like basically one disc?
No. Just putt with a driver and drive with a putter. So
I could throw a little drive off the, like a little layup shot with an Envy or whatever, and then I can go big with a driver on my second shot. Yeah, I'm driving with the putter.
All right. Well, we're gonna find out.
And I feel like it'll keep me in bounds more often too.
Let's do it in Waco and see what happens.
I throw out of bounds a lot.
That would be fun to do in Waco and see what happens. Oh my gosh.
All right, let's keep it moving.
I think I'm done. I don't like the rest I wrote. It's not good, so.
Give us one more. I want one more.
Okay. Would you rather carry 50 discs at a tournament or 5 discs?
5 discs.
5.
See, that one was so dumb. I agree. 5 is the right answer. I should have come up with a better one, like 20 or 2 would have been better.
I mean, if
30
Jake
or three.
Wolf is on this podcast.
30 or
Jake
two?
Wolf is,
no, 30 or three.
That's a better one.
Better.
I'd probably go with 30. Joey carries like over 30 discs anyway, so he's going to pick 30.
Yeah, I pick 30.
You carry 30 discs?
Look, you know,
ouch.
It's just a sign that I'm inexperienced. I'm undecided on the course.
Actually, the older I'm getting, the more when I'm like building my bag for the season or before a tournament, I feel more and more tempted to throw in more molds and more discs. And I feel like, oh, I have this one. And that's what kind of like fits right between these two. And then this one could fit right there. And I'm kind of finding myself being like, man, I kind of want to carry 30 discs. But I just remember like back in the good old days when I felt like I was like a really good player, all I literally needed was 3 discs, maybe 4. And then you just learn how to shape those shots. I think it's a way cooler way to play disc golf. I wish the Pro Tour had a disc limit.
Do you think it's harder to do it that way? Like, do you think it's harder to do the Cale Lavisca where you have like, you know, that was the classic thing that we always used to see. He would rock up to A tiers and he had so few discs in his bag that in the bottom pocket, they wouldn't even stand up straight. Like they were all just like flopped over on the side. And I wonder if that's like harder to kind of take one or two discs in each kind of speed slot and then learn how to consistently hit every angle, or just like have one angle that you are really good at releasing on and then just getting a ton of discs that all do different things off that angle.
I low-key think that's one of the coolest flexes in disc golf, if you can do it. If you can show up to the course with like as little amount of discs as possible and still like shred, I think that that's so cool. Like two people come to mind when I think of that growing up. There was this guy named Rod Baca. He'd have like 4 discs in this like tiny little bag. And another guy, Jordan Cowles, he'd have 2 rocks, a boss, and like a roller disc. And that was it. He'd putt with a rock. So it was like, I don't know. I romanticize about the concept of playing disc golf with just like a little tiny bag. I just picked up like this like nutsack style bag. So it's, you have like 6 discs and carrying it around, just you feel so cool just having like so little.
And it shockingly makes a lot of decisions so much easier because you only have the tools you have and you have to make it work. I think it's like a really cool aspect of the game. And I really want to say 2 things about having few discs. Number one, the Pro Tour media, I think it was a couple of years ago at this point, did a thing where they were like weighing pros bags. I don't know if you remember that, if you guys were part of that.
Yes.
And my bag was the lightest bag out of everyone. So I was really proud of that. That's one. And then two, going back like probably 20 years ago, I was playing in Canada. I was playing a random draw doubles and I was paired up with this older looking guy, kind of hippie looking, never seen him or heard of him before. We were playing at Queen Elizabeth Park in Vancouver, which legend status course. I learned a lot there as a kid. And this guy had a disc golf bag that was the weirdest bag I've ever seen. It probably was kind of a nutsack bag style. And he had like 3 discs. And those were the dirtiest discs I've ever seen. And like really old school, like almost like lid style frisbees. They were kind of right between that really old school and new school style of disc. And I was like, oh no, here we go. This is going to be the worst thing ever. And he turned out to be by far the best player there. His name is Glenn Whitlock. If any Canadian is listening now, or maybe any old school disc golfer, you might have heard of Glenn Whitlock. He is a freaking disc golf legend. And it was beyond inspiring for me to play doubles with him when I was like 11 or 12 years old. It blew my mind, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So shout out Glenn Whitlock and Disc Golf Vancouver from 20 years ago. It shaped who I am
today.
Ooh,
I found him. I found him on the PDGA. PDGA number 3513. Member since 1986. He's in the Hall of Fame. Wow, he has earned 52. Oh,
he has a disc called the Whittler, and it's I remember throwing it, and it's like the funnest disc ever. It's like a hybrid catch disc, disc golf disc, and I don't know. I haven't seen one in probably 20 years, but they are out there somewhere. And if someone out there listening has a Whittler, I'll take it.
One of the future segments that I want to do with you guys, I think I'm going to do it next episode, is career earnings trivia on PDGA page, taking like guys that you think you know, like famous pros, and I'm going to go and find their career earnings and see if you guys, how well you think you know their lifetime achievements in the PDGA.
Well, now we can go study it.
Perfect.
Thanks for spoiling.
All right. I'm good.
I'm happy. I hope you enjoyed, and I'll come up with a better one next time.
I liked it. I think you did a good job. Joey, do you want me to go?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I remember talking to Joey like way back when, and we were brainstorming ideas for names of podcasts, and this one came up. It's called Inside the Circle of Your Mind. And while it's not the name of the podcast, it's going to be a segment with me talking a little bit about the mental game and what goes along with the mental game. And I figured since we're in 2025, it's a fresh year. There's New Year's resolutions, there's goals. And I just want to talk a little bit about what type of mindset and goals I'm bringing to the course in 2025. And they actually asked this on the DGPT players group. What are your goals? And I was looking through them, and a lot of them are somewhat generic, saying like, I want to win worlds, I want to win this term, and I want to get top 10, which are all good goals, but I feel like they're finite goals. You're dependent on a specific result. And I always hate making goals like that, because what happens if I don't achieve that? Then I have this empty feeling inside. So for 2025, my main goal is to look in the mirror and truly be proud of my efforts. And to elaborate a little bit on that, that means being present moment focused and intentional, focusing on what I can control and not stressing about what I cannot. If it doesn't matter in 5 months, why should it matter in 5 minutes? So realizing that, and not elevating your fight or flight response, not raising your cortisol levels, because high stress is literally like the worst thing you can do. It's almost better to eat junk food and be happy than to just be stressed all the time. Knowing when to push and when to go with the flow by trusting my gut, being kind and encouraging to myself rather than being my own worst enemy, which is something that I really can fall victim to if I'm not getting a result that I want or not adhering to a process. So all of those things are something that I'm really focusing on, just trying to maintain a high level of mind and gratitude while also exploring different perspectives, because at the end of the day, I'm playing frisbee out in the park or at beautiful locations. So keeping that mentality can at the forefront of my mind, I feel like, is really going to be beneficial for 2025 and beyond. So create the good habits for however long I decide to play disc golf now is something that I'm really leaning into. And I'd like to hear Joey and Simon kind of elaborate on some of their goals and aspirations for 2025 and potentially even beyond.
Yeah. I will start quickly with a question and let you think about the answer while I talk a little bit. My question for you, Eagle, is were there any other comments on that post from other players, any other goals that you read and were like, oh, that's, I like that one. Like, what were the ones that stuck out to you? So that's like my question for you. And then I'm going to sort of just like follow up and say that, yeah, I mean, I try to set I try to set process-based goals, like things that I can control every day. And so I'm trying to not like make it this thing that has a lot of chance. Like, I feel like if I was going to make a goal like cash at every event, that was going to be something that would create a lot of pressure to fulfill throughout the season. And I think I have subconsciously sort of created these goals the last two seasons that I have gone out on tour, 2021 and 2024. Not maybe like externally, but definitely internally. The thinking in the back of my mind was, all right, this is your chance. This is your chance to go out and prove to you, prove to the world, prove to whoever needs to be proven that you are a consistent caliber touring disc golfer. And you need to go out and perform enough to like make that a thing. And I think that that really snuck up on me in a lot of big moments in a lot of tournaments. Like that really kind of put more pressure than it needed to. And I think that it also really like describes conditional confidence. Like you're going to be confident, like if you only based on like a series of things happening, and it's not necessarily based on the fact that you're just comfortable with who you are as a person, and your ability to throw the disc isn't going to affect like how you feel and how you feel about yourself. And I see you smiling, Eagle, because I am a disciple of the Eagle Mental School as well. So a lot of these things are things that I've been told by the bird himself. But I'm also reading a really awesome book this winter called Zen Golf. It was written for regular golfers, but it really has a ton of amazing lessons. And I'm definitely going to be bringing some little excerpts to this show in the future for us to discuss, just because there's some super interesting little points that it brings up that I think we would have a lot of interesting thoughts on. But yeah, I mean, that's, if you are going to be a professional disc golfer and you're going to spend the amount of money and hours on your physical side of your game, whether that's like physical therapy, going to the gym, like field work, playing disc golf, like the amount of time that a regular touring disc golfer is putting in on the physical side, and then to just completely discount the fact that most professional disc golfers will admit that at this level, the game is at least 50% mental, then you should be trying to invest the same amount of time and effort into mental training. And I think that's like one of the big things that clicked for me this offseason.
Right. Can I elaborate just a little bit on some of those notions?
Yes.
So it's tough being your own coach as well, because what I wrote down here is knowing when to push and knowing when to go with the flow and trust your gut is really a key aspect. Because one thing that I find myself getting stressed about is knowing that I'm the one who needs to go out and put in the work. And there's times where I feel like maybe I'm not doing enough, and that can create stress. And the last little note that I wrote that kind of relates to this is to be kind and encouraging to yourself rather than being your own worst enemy, and knowing when it's time to rest and like embrace the off season. Like, all right, I can chill out. Like, this is my time to lay on the couch. For me, it's watch anime. For you guys, it's probably watching darts, and not feeling bad about it. But like knowing that when you're going to the gym or choosing to go out into the cold weather and do a practice session, like that's awesome. Like that's helping you grow confidence and move you closer to whatever aspiration you do have. So like it's a difficult balance, because I feel that almost everybody should strive for more, and we are all more capable than we think we are. But at the same time, not to beat ourselves up for not doing things when you know, we want to relax or, you know, do something that potentially could be detrimental for our disc golf game. At least, you know, that's the way I think about it, and some of the challenges that I've had and I still do. So, yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it, I feel like.
My turn?
It's your turn.
So can you quickly repeat the question, please, exactly what I'm answering?
It's what is your goal? What are your goals or goal, okay, or what mindset do you aspire aspire to adhere to during the 2025 season?
All right, I'll begin with saying that I am currently actively working on hiring a full-time videographer / editor / social media manager / content creator / caddy to travel with me full-time. This has multiple reasons, of course, but mainly I want to bring a product to the fans and the people that really brings everything up close. Like, bring everyone inside the circle, inside the ropes, inside my mind, inside what it's like exactly to do what we do, and more or less just film everything. And I really want to make sure this really captures, like, in the most authentic way of what we're going through and what it is like to do what we do. So that's going to be obviously a big project. Also, another thing is that I want to do a sober year, which I do not know if I have it in me, which sounds kind of sad to say, but obviously enjoying a beer after rounds has been a huge part of my life. And I just have to admit that sometimes I don't like it. It sometimes feels like I don't want a beer after my round. Sometimes it feels like I need a beer after my round. And once it starts feeling like that, it becomes a bit weird, uncomfortable, and you have to start kind of questioning where this is going and why exactly do I feel like I need it and not just I want it. So, Yeah, I mean, this entire off season, it's been over 3 months now. I have had definitely less than 10 beers in the last 3 months. I went to Puerto Rico for Christmas, and I mean, there I just felt like I just couldn't say no. But it's going to be a process. I don't know if I can do it, but I will definitely try. I know I want to, and I feel like wanting to do something is definitely the first step into doing it. And besides that, when it really comes to, like, on the course and, like, performance-wise, I'm just kind of going to wait and see how it falls into place. I feel maybe just being sober will help me sleep better, hopefully. That's at least one of the side effects that I've heard can help. And I would just want to know what it feels like if I'm just feeling a bit more ready to go and a bit more prepared in a way. And I just never want to have that feeling again after I tap out my last putt of a round that I have to go back to my hotel so I can have a beer and, like, calm down. Because even, like, right, if it goes really well around, I need a beer to calm myself down. If it goes really poorly, I need a beer to calm myself down. If it just goes so-so, I need a beer to calm myself down. Because there's just, it's kind of a high-stress job that we're doing. And everyone needs their coping mechanism. And instead of going for a beer after my round, I want to go for a run, for example. Or in the gym and do some stretching and some light workouts or something like that. With that obviously comes also nutrition in general. That has been my biggest weakness my entire life. I've been wanting to eat healthier ever since I can remember, learning stuff in Switzerland about nutrition. And
does the guy you're trying to hire on, do you want him to be your personal chef?
I honestly have not thought about that, but that would be an extra bonus. I'm sure he's going to be pretty busy editing most of the time.
Add another slash.
Yeah, personal chef would be next level.
Well, and I think that's another benefit in my eyes to the way that I think the three of us enjoy touring, which is, like, in decent groups at Airbnbs. And I think that if you have a good squad of people, it can be a lot easier because you can do some kind of, like, co-food, especially if you have a good group of people together who all share similar food goals. It can make that side of things a lot easier, whereas I think typically trying to eat healthy on the road all season long is one of the bigger challenges to doing disc golf full-time traveling. And I think that I'm looking forward to, like, staying with, you know, you guys this year and, like, being able to, like, all buy food together and, like, cook healthy meals. And, like, I mean, Eagle, there was that little stretch in 2021 where we were, like, in so it was, like, when Simon was still hurt, and we did, like, Texas States, and we did Jonesboro, and we did maybe Austin, and it was, like, Calvin was with us and Heather Young, and we, like, everybody had a dinner night that they cooked for the whole little squad, and we were, like, playing, mm-hmm. we were playing cards at night. That was a whole little, a little month or two that was really fun because we had a great little group of people.
Right.
But, yeah, couple things on my list of things I want to do this year. We'll see how it goes. I'm really excited. I think with the platform that I've built over the last 6 years, it would be a waste to not take advantage of what I've built, and I just think it has a lot of potential. Like, if I do everything right, I think me hiring someone full time will literally just pay for itself by YouTube ad revenue, sponsorships, and I mean, if he's going to caddy for me as well, I can give over some prize money as well. And in an ideal world, it would actually not be an expense. It would be profitable for me to hire someone.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you can create a cool, like, caddy player. I mean, I think it exists less in the MPO world, but I see a lot in the FPO side of the our sport, the really essential player caddy relationships. I mean, you can ask her how much her caddy means to her. Missy Gannon is, like, one of those people, I think. It's like, take Tom out of the equation. I'm sure she still has plenty of wins, but I bet that Tom is an essential part of that winning formula and is a key component. And if he's not there, I'm sure that that changes a lot for her.
Yeah. 100%. Maybe professional disc golf caddies is a career in the future. Because
I mean,
we might need
I think
it.
It's overlooked. It's overlooked because the instant thing is everybody goes, oh, well, we don't, you don't need the yardages like you do in golf. But I think, you know, that's such a, that's just a surface level job for a golf caddy.
Well, a rangefinder
so
can
much
give
more
you that.
Important.
Yeah, no.
Right.
They're not for yardages. They're for much more than that.
Because it's a team sport. It takes an individual sport and attempts to make it a team sport. It's, like, basically how it works. And if you listen to good golfers and good caddies on the PGA Tour, I mean, they say it all in the – they use the word we. Like, we want it here. This is where we want it. We want it right here. That we hit that. We hit that shot so good yesterday. Like, we hit this shot, and it's like an us thing.
Maybe Eagle wants to be my caddy one day when he's done playing.
I've caddied.
You pay enough.
Have you caddied for him before, Eagle?
Yeah, I jumped on the bag when Simon won his first national tour back in 2015, Ledgestone.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Really?
And I remember on a Smashbox podcast, Terry Miller asked Simon, if you could pick one caddy, who would you pick? And Simon picked me.
Wow.
That is so cute.
Was it? Was it at the start at the start of the round, or you, like, ran up to him halfway
through?
No,
it was when they used to do final nines. Because
oh,
I got
yes.
done with my round, and then there was a final nine at
That's
Lake Eureka.
That's right. Now I remember.
Uh-huh. And I jumped on the bag.
Was it planned? I kind of want to hear this story. Did you ask him, or?
I think I was just there because I was done with my tournament, and we were staying together. And I'm like, do you want a caddy? And he's like, yeah, sure.
That's
and I jumped
Eagle
on the
was still a Simon fan back then.
Old are the days.
Did you
have
I
ever
did
you
say
you?
Anything?
I think you caddied for me once at Waco. You were sick and you had to drop out of the tournament, and you came by the course and you were caddying for a short period of time.
Oh.
I don't actually maybe you were doing Discmania promo videos, like Instagram stories, I think.
That sounds like something I would do.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you've ever caddied for me.
Well, maybe if you make it to the Pro Tour Finals and I don't, that's my chance.
Oh, you're going to be back home with your family as soon as possible.
That's true. Unless you pay me.
I've caddied for you a few rounds, Simon, I think.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
It's fun. It's different. Every player is different to caddy for. I want Eagle, did you say anything to him in that final nine? Were you like giving him advice, or did you just like stay super quiet and leave him alone?
I think I was quiet, because why? He was playing like some of the best disc golf of his life, and I just got off of playing absolutely terrible. So I just let him cook. That was my mentality.
Wow. Throwback.
That's fair.
So guys, I think we've been on for about an hour now. Is that right?
An hour and 5 minutes.
Joey has his segment, and then we're going to wrap it up because we got stuff to do.
Always.
Well, we are going to do a little bit of spicy news because we have some spicy news. First off, in the disc golf world, we have our big fat announcement this morning. Two-time world champion Isaac Robinson has signed a 3-year deal with Latitude 64. Big moves. That's probably the biggest free agent signing that we'll have this offseason. Unless there's a deal that's going to get kind of bought out and moved. I think that was definitely the biggest name who's contract was up, and I mean, it's a big move for Latitude 64. I think this is the biggest signing that they've made outside of Kristen since they had Ricky. This is definitely right. The first big MPO superstar name that they've had since Ricky Wysocki. A couple of the details on the contract. They say he'll make $175,000 a year in guaranteed salaries with immediate royalties on all signature and Tour Series disc sales. After sales incentives and bonuses, he's projected to make north of $300,000 a year. In this market, I mean, on another episode, we can talk about the disc golf economy, but I'll say briefly, in this market, that's a great deal for Isaac Robinson. I think he's at a good place. They have good plastic, and for me, based on what I know of the current situation and the current economy, that seems like a good deal for him. I'm happy for Isaac.
Yeah, I've been following Drew Gibson's videos a little bit, and that's about as much as I know when it comes to House of Discs related news, which they're still making moves. Like Dynamic signed Parker Welk. Obviously, Isaac is the biggest name in the offseason right now. So, like, it's interesting. It's good to see that they're still making power moves out there.
Yeah, I agree. It's so sad that we know this kind of information way before it gets released. I have really a deep wish that eventually it'll be so serious in disc golf that we will actually not know secret announcements before they are actually announced.
I actually didn't know about the Isaac Robinson deal. Like, I only had speculation based off of the disc golf world, because that's what they kept saying.
Yeah, okay. Well, then you're not really trying to know in that case.
I'm not. You're talking to Drew Gibson more than me.
That is true. But it is so freaking fun just to know. I wish I didn't want to know everything. There's a world where I don't want to know everything, so I'm actually like surprised and like hyped by announcements. But then at the same time, it is so fun to freaking know like gossip and stuff you're not supposed to know. But anyway, no, happy for Isaac, of course. I think when I first heard it's Latitude, I thought, wow, what a perfect fit. I don't know why he fits perfectly, but for some reason, I can just see it. Like, I saw the photos this morning and I was like, yeah, looks like he belongs right there. For one second, I thought, wait, is that Lauri Lehtinen?
Oh my gosh, that is exactly what I was about to say. Right after you stopped talking, I was going to say that.
It is Isaac. And yeah, no, great guy, deserves every dollar he gets, of course. And he's our champ. And let's see if he can do it a third time in 2025 in Europe.
I think
in Europe with a European brand.
That's exactly right. No, I think it's good. I think the fit is really well is because he's the man there, and he was looking for a company. Like, if he had gone to a Discraft or a Discmania. In my eyes, that would be a little weird because he's the reigning 2-time world champion. I don't think you want to go to a company where you aren't the number one player on that team if that's where your career is at. And so the fact that he doesn't have to be overshadowed or compete for that like top spot on the pyramid at Latitude, I think is why that fit is so nice.
I mean, it's crazy like to say this because in my brain, Isaac's still somewhat new to the tour because I've been on tour for 10 years now, but he has 3 majors. He's literally one of the greatest players of all time, which is crazy to say. Like, he's always going to be remembered. Like, when you look at the world championship list, you're going to see Isaac Robinson back to back. Like, he is anchored in disc golf history at this point. So, mm-hmm. like, I'm happy to see that he's making, you know, good money playing disc golf, like guaranteed money, which he absolutely should because what he's done in disc golf is very impressive and honestly should be, I don't know what the general consensus is, but my opinion, it should be respected way more than it feels like.
Yeah, for sure. What are some discs you think he's going to throw? What discs you guys think he's going to be? He said the Rive is going to be one of his big distance drivers.
I don't know Latitude discs. Are you kidding me? I barely know my own discs.
The only thing I can think of, like, he putted with a PA3, so maybe like a Maiden, Makana, or Judge for his putter. But
yeah,
you know, maybe they have something in the works for him as well, like an Isaac Robinson line. So it's hard to speculate what he might throw.
All right. Well, in other news, DGA announced a lot of their signings. I'll just go through the list of players because they're all pretty notable here. Andrew Miranda, lead card European Open, really solid player back with DGA. Andrew Marweed is re-signing with DGA. Let's see. Katrina Allen is going to return for the 2025 season for the final year of her contract. Sullivan Tipton, Sullivan Tipton might be one of, like, the darkest dark horse players in disc golf. I mean, maybe one of the most slept-on top 50 players in the world, in my opinion. And then, did I say Cole Werdalen? Cole Werdalen. Super solid player. Yes, for a third season. Roland Kaur, one of the top Estonian players, signs a 2-year deal with Pro Discus. He finished inside the top 70 this year in the world, I'm pretty sure. So we'll see a lot more of him this year if he is committing to a tour. So way to go, DGA, bringing back a lot of really solid players. And then the last big piece of news, a little closer to home for me, our Minnesota icon, Cale Laviska, is going back to his first sponsor, Discraft. Really happy for him. Everything that happens in this state, in this city, runs through Cale Laviska, or at least he has something to do with it. And I'll just say this. This was called Prodigy Country for the last, 11 years for a reason. I mean, every single course in our city was getting new baskets. It was almost always Prodigy baskets. And, you know, there was a lot of kind of lower-level Prodigy team members. So I'm curious to see how much noticeable shift will happen in like the first year on that team. And I mean every year I feel like Cale makes a commitment to touring again, and I'm curious to see if with the new sponsor that's actually gonna kind of hold up a little more. I don't know if he'll ever do a full season. Maybe that's not what he means, but I would love to see it. I think he still has tons of good disc golf left in him if he was consistent. I mean, he almost won Waco a few years ago.
Right. Yeah. Cale is notoriously one of the coolest, most chill guys in disc golf, and picking up him is a great move by any brand, because if you sponsor Cale, you get Minnesota.
You get Airborne. You get his whole army. You get his whole umbrella of extension, his course design business, his merchandise business, his properties that he invests in and rents, and then kind of like changes renovates the whole area. The preserve obviously was one of his endeavors, and you get just the whole presence that he brings, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. I I haven't met anyone on tour that has anything bad to say about Cale. He's always just like one of the chillest, most friendly people out there. So I'm happy to see that he's in a good place. We talked a little bit about it last week, how, you know, being three MVP sponsor players, we can respect other companies, and Discraft is definitely a really amazing company. So it's good to see that they're making moves and getting a great players and ambassadors alike.
They are making moves, but we are making waves.
We are making waves. That's true.
You're welcome. yeah, no, shout out Cale. I'm a bit sad that he didn't come to MVP, but best of luck to him. And if we would actually play like fun and short and cool courses on tour, then I mean, Cale could literally win any week.
Right.
He's that good. Yep.
You kick my butt.
Well, everyone, I think we have had a very nice second episode of Crushed Pepper. Tons of great segments. Still so many more things that I want to talk about. That means that we're going to have lots of episodes for you, because every time we get into these, I look at my list, and at the end, I still have like seven more things on it. And it's nice because it means that episode three is fully prepared.
Right. This was a very disc golf heavy podcast, which obviously this will happen quite often, but I'd also be open to having more podcasts that are less disc golf related and a little bit more fan orientated. So if you found this podcast, I believe if you're listening on Spotify, YouTube, or whatever, you can make a comment. Post a comment or a question, rather, about something in life you're having trouble with or you want to know from us that isn't disc golf related, and that will be a segment on a show in the future. So just want to plant that seed right now.
Hell yeah. Perfect stuff.
Simon, I want you to do the send-off. I am right now on the spot. You are going to be our send-off guy on these episodes because I think you have the best voice.
That's too much pressure, but okay. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. I was happy to see you guys' faces once again. Looking forward to next week already. Eagle, good luck in Arizona. And
thank you very much.
The Disc Golf Expo is right around the door. Right around the door? Right around the corner. Joey, I hope I get to see you there. And that's all from us. Next week, big announcements coming up on the Disc Golf Tour world.
The tour world. All right, guys, keep on dreaming.
Bye. Later.